Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Towers, a spokesman for the Pesticide Action Network. He works side-by-side with Californians to prevent pesticide exposure, promote local farming, and build healthier communities. He previously worked for Toxic Action Center as a community organizer in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Towers.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And this last year was the worst die-off of bees, the worst loss in more than 40 years for beekeepers in the United States who lost more than 50% of their bees to what they call colony collapse disorder. Now, the European Commission have banned a number of insecticides that they have linked to the die-off of bees, and this has been backed by the European Food Safety Authority. What is happening in the United States in terms of addressing this issue?
Well, as you said, Ian, we are at a crisis point here in the United States when it comes to bees, whether you call it colony collapse disorder or bee declines, problems with honeybee health. We are increasingly finding colonies empty or void of adults. But we're also seeing acute bee die-offs. We're seeing erratic changes in behavior that have all led to major declines in the number of bees. And that's big news here in the United States because a huge number of our fruits and vegetables, especially things like almonds or apples or cherries, rely on honeybees for pollination. And so without those bees, we put much of our agricultural system, our food system, in jeopardy. We also put the livelihoods of those beekeepers that depend on the ability to bring bees in jeopardy. And obviously those bees that many of us care about are in harm's way as well. So we're at a really important point right now. And it's really up to the Environmental Protection Agency here in the United States to take a look at the evidence, these dramatic bee declines, and take some immediate action to restrict pesticides and other problems that pose harm to honeybees.
But is the American Agriculture Department, whoever has oversight over pesticides, what notice are they taking of the European Commission and the European Food Safety Authority's banning of this class of insecticide called neonicotinoids?
Yeah, neonicotinoids, correct. You know, the Environmental Protection Agency, the federal agency here in the United States charged with regulating pesticide use, including these neonicotinoids, has largely ignored its responsibility to protect bees and the livelihood of beekeepers, as well as our entire food system. To date, the agency has done very little review of these products, has relied on industry, pesticide industry science in making their determinations, and is, you know, even in the face of these dramatic declines, as you mentioned earlier, in some cases upwards of 70 or 80% losses with some beekeepers, has refused to act. Instead, they're saying the agency will wait until 2018 to fully evaluate the impacts of these products. Now, we hope the European decision will light a fire under the Environmental Protection Agency and urge them to act, but we have yet to hear any response out of the EPA since the European decision.
But if the bees are dying off, where we've lost 50% of them in 1 year, there's been a one-year die-off of up to 50%. If that is not getting their attention, I don't know what has. You'd think that all people involved in agriculture would see the writing on the wall that this is the canary in the coal mine here, because if bees and the fact that they pollinate all of these incredible crops, about 70% of global food crops, from nuts, soybeans, squash, cucumber, apples, oranges, cherries, blueberries, avocados, peaches, melons, etc., then our whole food system is in jeopardy here. You know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that.
I think that's a good point. The unfortunate news is that the pesticide industry, especially two of the largest manufacturers of these neonicotinoid pesticides, Bayer and Syngenta, hold tremendous sway over the Environmental Protection Agency. And our hope is to be able to cut through that. So with a group of beekeepers and other public interest groups, we filed a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency a few weeks ago. We hope that will force the agency to take notice, as well as this European decision and these you know, disastrous numbers of bee losses this year. The combination of those factors, we hope, will force the agency to take notice and take action. As you said, if that doesn't, who knows what will. But we do know that there is public pressure is mounting. Increasingly, folks are calling on the agency to take action as they can. And only through that do we think there will be enough political will for EPA to take the right steps to protect pollinators.
So, again, let me remind the audience that I'm speaking with Paul Towers, who is a spokesman for the Pesticide Action Network. He works side-by-side with Californians to prevent pesticide exposure, promote local farming, and build healthier communities. He previously worked for Toxics Action Center as a community organizer in Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and we're talking about the alarming die-off of bees in the United States and the European Commission having banned a group of pesticides that they consider the cause of this unprecedented die-off of bees, which is presumably happening in Europe as well, right?
That's right. These neonicotinoid pesticides were introduced some years earlier in Europe before they were introduced in the United States. And interestingly enough, the signs of these dramatic bee declines first started in Europe several years prior. So we first witnessed them in 2006 in the United States, and they were being witnessed a few years prior in Europe. Due to these losses, there has been a concerted effort by our sister organizations and environmental organizations, beekeepers, to hold the European Union accountable and to push through some restrictions on the use of these neonicotinoid pesticide products. Some countries have individually already taken that action, and the success has been noticeable. Bee populations have recovered in some cases or have been healthier, and there have been no impacts on those agricultural systems. So we know that it is already possible that we can restrict the use of these products and create healthy spaces for farmers and for pollinators. And we hope that the Environmental Protection Agency in this country will do the same.
Well, on another related issue, there was a recent study that just came out about how the very ubiquitous pesticide Roundup, which is used as a weed killer on people's lawns and on golf courses, etc., but it's also used extensively in agriculture. It's made by Monsanto, and farmers use this. They spray Roundup weed killer directly under the crops to kill the weeds in the field without harming the crops. So Roundup is on just about everything in terms of the basic foods, on corn and soybeans and all of the grains that go into so much of our food supply. And Roundup is one of the two dozen top herbicides in the markets contain this particular element called glyphosate. And in 2007, as much as 185 million pounds of glyphosate was used by U.S. farmers, double the amount used 6 years ago. And now you have some scientists at MIT and at Arthur D. Little Incorporated who've come up with a study suggesting that glyphosate is, in fact, causing cancers, Parkinson's disease, infertility, etc., in human beings. So where does that stand? That's pretty alarming.
Yeah, the pervasive use of Monsanto's Roundup it raises concerns about any time you use any product in dramatic or in large quantities, what the impacts might be on health. In terms of the increasing weed resistance that forces the reliance on even greater and more hazardous pesticides. But this most recent study does raise some questions about the impacts of the product Roundup itself as well as its active ingredient, glyphosate. So we should take this study as one study, and we should use it to ask more questions. The body of research around Roundup, because of restrictions placed by pesticide manufacturers, namely Monsanto, have limited the ability to look at the impacts of this product in important ways. Many of the so-called inert ingredients in a Roundup, even that make up sometimes, 98% of the product, are considered off limits. They're trade secrets. And so most researchers are unable to even understand or look at what those ingredients might be. So there are a lot of questions raised by some of the new research, but the pervasive use of Roundup and actually these neonicotinoid products that are used on millions of acres of corn and soy and cotton across the United States and Europe raise really the question of the type of agriculture we're practicing in this country right now. They're part of a chemical treadmill that is unsustainable, that feeds an industrial system that is neither healthy for farmers, for bees or beekeepers, and for the people that eat the food down the chain. So really we need to take this research as well as the European decision and apply them to the United States and make sure that we have the best pesticide policies on the books that protect health and the environment rather than the interests of pesticide corporations.
Let me bring in Charles Benbrook, who's a research professor and program leader at the Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources at Washington State University. With the combination, Charles, of the European Commission banning these neonicotinoids, pesticides, and because of the colony collapse disorder of bees, where in this country 50% of the bees died off last winter. And then you've got also the study coming out of MIT that Roundup, one of Monsanto's most successful products, may be the cause of Parkinson's disease and a lot of other cancers. What is the alternative then? I mean, in other words, not that the United States is about to ban either of these Roundup or all these neonicotinoids, but obviously somebody has to put forth an alternative here, and I take it that you're working on alternatives to these ubiquitously used pesticides that may well be poisoning us.
Well, that's right. I mean, I've been conducting research for a number of years on how changes in our farming systems and technology have actually made our problems more serious and difficult in dealing with pests. We are American farmers today are in many cases more heavily reliant on both toxic chemistry and toxic genetics to get a crop through to harvest than they were, 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I think we've, as a country, we're sort of reaching the end of an era where farmers can always count on there being another chemical or another gene that can be brought into a cropping system to deal with whatever pest problem there is, and I think the alternative is to start thinking about designing farming systems where crops are just healthier from the get-go, and where the conditions in the cropping system are not so conducive to the buildup of pest populations. So I think a huge part of the solution to this problem is just simple management to prevent the severity of pest issues that we're facing today.
So what is your reaction to these reports coming, the banning of the neonicotinoids by the European Commission and the MIT study that indicates that Roundup may be the cause of Parkinson's disease and other cancers in human beings?
Well, the steps taken by the European Commission are absolutely extraordinary. I was just in the UK for a month and talked to a number of scientists and officials, and it certainly didn't seem at the time that such an action would be completed. It's a very bold move on their part, and one that's actually quite out of character. The European Commission traditionally has been, fairly conservative in taking action on high-risk pesticides. I think the major reason that they did it is that there's such compelling evidence that the moratorium on the use of nicotinal seed treatments in certain parts of Europe has dramatically reduced the prevalence of colony collapse disorder. So they have some pretty good reason to believe that putting this moratorium on will substantially enhance the health of their colonies. And you know, I think that both in Europe and North America, the plight of the bees is so serious that you know, very strong measures are warranted. Now, this paper that's come out on Roundup, you know, I really think that it, you know, it's an interesting set of speculation. It doesn't report any new findings. It's sort of a review of a lot of lines of evidence. I do not think that it raises any substantial new evidence or risk concerns with glyphosate, and I certainly find the connections between glyphosate and Roundup use and colony collapse disorder to be very questionable. But what is in the literature, and I think is indisputable, a lot of insects depend on a variety of native weed species as part of their food sources, as do bees. And the Roundup-ready cropping system, which is now used on 180 million acres in America, it's like over half of the farmland in America is planted to Roundup-ready crops and sprayed with Roundup herbicide. That is a kind of a scorched earth weed management program in that, it really, farmers want to control every single weed. And by virtue of doing that and doing that successfully, there is a substantial reduction in the plant life that's out there across the countryside, and again, particularly in heavily farmed areas, to the point where the absence of some of these natural native weeds, has pulled the rug out from under both butterfly and bee and other insect populations.
But you were just saying a minute ago, Charles Benbrook, that the Europeans had a kind of test program or something where they banned the use of these neonicotinoids, and the bees came back. And that's, you're saying...
Let me be really clear on what the Europeans did. In several jurisdictions, which would be like the equivalent of a state in the United States, in provinces in Italy, for example, and in some provinces in France, the regional authorities put a moratorium on the use of nicotinal seed treatments in maize, corn crops, and in canola. These were the two large acreage crops where the seeds were being treated with nicotinal insecticides, and many scientists felt that it was this seed treatment use of the nicotinals that was really the straw that broke the camel's back for the integrity of honeybee hives. And so in these areas, in the year that the moratoriums were imposed, there was a significant reduction in colony collapse disorder. These areas did not ban all uses of nicotinals, but they did ban the seed treatment uses, which happened to be the use that impacted the most acreage. The fact that the European Commission has gone to a complete ban is really, quite extraordinary.
But are there similar experiments going on here in the United States to test to see whether if you ban these neonicotinoids from agriculture that the bees come back?
I'm not aware of any state or local area that's tried to put a local ban on. The US EPA will obviously be watching closely what's done in Europe, and you know, from my read of the science, there is a very strong case to be made to put a moratorium on the use of the of neonicotinoid seed treatments for our major field crops. I think that just doing that will have a dramatically positive effect on bee populations, but it will leave the nicotinol insecticides, the traditional sprayed insecticides, for fruit and vegetable farmers who rely on them very heavily, and because they're available and part of their insect control systems, these farmers are not using much higher risk organophosphate and synthetic pyrethroid insecticides that, great effort has been put to reduce the use of over the last 15 years. So, we got to remember that fruits and vegetables are only grown on about 4 million acres in the entire country, whereas corn, soybeans, and cotton, which would be three genetically engineered crops treated with, where the seeds are treated with nicotinols, essentially 100% of them, cover 180 million acres. So it's a much, much bigger part of the countryside and hence a much more important and ubiquitous source of exposure to bees.
Well, let me just bring Paul Towers back, spokesperson for the Pesticide Action Network. We'll have to make this the closing question, but or closing answer, I should say. But just comment, if you will, on what Charles Benbrook has just told us, that if you ban the neonicotinoids, as the Europeans have done, then you may have to, the farmers may have to resort to these even worse pesticides.
Well, I think that we have seen farmers in the Midwest already. I work with a group of farmers in Nebraska, and they've already taken steps to phase out the use of neonicotinoid products on their seeds. And we've seen success in their growing operations, if not the same or better yields. The challenge for many farmers is getting access to seed that isn't treated by these neonicotinoid pesticides. Handful of the six largest pesticide corporations also tend to be the six largest seed corporations. And so that leaves farmers without many opportunities to purchase the types of seed that they might want without these pretreatments. So I think we're in a place where we see that there's a way to grow commodity crops, whether it's corn or soy, without these sorts of treatments. And I think the same can be true for some of these fruits and vegetables. But we need to focus on reducing the greatest use, starting in these commodity crops, and especially in many of the places where bees interact. It's possible, but we need leadership from the Environmental Protection Agency.
And just in closing, Charles Benbrook, do you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not going to happen voluntarily. The EPA will have to act. I think there'll be an extremely strong effort on behalf of the seed industry and the pesticide industry to block the action. And there's a lot at stake. I mean, honeybees are absolutely essential for pollination of most of our fruits and vegetables that we all need to eat more of, and the health of the American public will suffer greatly if there's any further declines. I mean, even in California, in the almond orchards, they weren't able to get they were short a third of the hives that they need to fully and adequately pollinate the almond crop just this spring in California. So we have a major, major problem on our hands.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Charles Benbrook, again a research professor and program leader at the Center for Sustaining Agriculture and Natural Resources at Washington State University, and Paul Towers, a spokesman for the Pesticide Action Network. Thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you.
This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Nick Garino. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Love.